Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast.
Hey everyone, happy Wednesday and welcome to Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts Amelia
and Beth.
Happy post-Labor Day.
It is after Labor Day by the time everyone's hearing this, but that was just such a depressing statement because it means I'm probably going to have to go back to work soon.
That stinks.
I know. I've had a long vacation. I've gone lots of places. I've seen lots of things.
You have.
And I've enjoyed every moment of it.
There you go. My life, on the other hand, does not change at all.
There's a lot more traffic now when you're trying to drive over here, now that all the kids are back.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So maybe we'll get some new listeners from the variety of new students coming in all over the Boston area.
Yeah, maybe.
You don't sound too enthusiastic about that.
No, I'm very enthusiastic. I'm happy.
You should tell your face that.
I can't. I have Botox.
So this week, actually, let me back that up and try again. Last week, one of our listeners, one of you all out there, reached out to us, and well, this was actually a couple of months ago, and said, hey, if you ever want to meet, I would love to get together and do some interviewing and some recording. And so we took her up on that. So last Wednesday night, we went and we met up at Danvers State Hospital with the fabulous and generous and funny medium Jamie Day.
Yeah, she's a delight. I really enjoyed our time together. She's a genuine, lovely person.
Yes.
And I couldn't believe she has a lot of children. She has four kids.
Yeah, four kids.
And still has this, like,
amazing energy all around her.
Beautiful, youthful.
Yes.
Energy. Yes. Yeah, she's great. She's a great person. And yeah. I'm so happy we got to meet her. That was awesome.
So it was a really fun experience. Amelia and I carpooled up to Danvers. And so neither one of us had ever been to the Danvers State Hospital before. So as we're driving along, we have Siri telling us, you know, take a left, take a right. And we get all the way up there and we're like, I don't think we're in the right place. There's like a zillion condos everywhere. And so Jamie, meanwhile, was there. We were a few minutes late. That was Amelia's fault. So we're driving up the hill. We're looking around like we can't possibly be in the right place. And we must have put in the wrong address for Siri to take us to. So Jamie's already there and she's taking pictures. Like, this is my current view. This is what I'm looking at. Here's where you're supposed to go. And Amelia and I are driving all over the property like, what? The condos. It's new. It's very, this is not spooky at all. And so we finally found Jamie because we were actually at the right place. And she was just fantastic.
Danvers State Hospital has a tremendous history here in the state of Massachusetts, a sad history. And we're going to let Jamie come on and explain some of that. But it is interesting because, as Beth said, it's no longer a state hospital.
No,
and it's been completely redone. It's surrounded by condos. Main facade is still there.
Yes.
Beautiful.
It is.
Beautiful. But there's an eerie feeling around, and we did a lot of cool stuff with Jamie. So we went to this little kind of hidden cemetery that was up there. That was very, very weird. A lot of unmarked graves, and there is a heaviness about it. There's a cornfield by it.
That cornfield was scary as anything.
Yeah, it's spooky.
And especially walking by it at dusk when it was just starting to get to that lovely buggy time of the evening, all I could imagine was just creepy crawlies coming out of the cornfield at us.
Yeah, I'm always worried with cornfields that there's going to be a murderer in them.
Good thing we don't have a lot of cornfields in Massachusetts.
Yeah, thank God.
I mean, there are some. There's like the corn mazes that you can go to now that it's Halloween season.
That's true.
All right. So back to the point. Jamie's going to tell us the history of Danvers State Hospital.
Could you just tell us a brief history of the hospital and the cemetery we visited?
Yeah, sure. So the hospital was opened in the 1870s. It was built to hold about 400 patients. And within 20 years, they had reached up to about 2,000 patients. The attic was full, the basement was full. And from what I hear, they only had 9 staff working at any given time.
That's so insane.
Yeah. And so the patients were overrunning it. They called it the Danvers State Sanatorium, the Danvers State Insane Asylum. It wasn't even called Danvers State Hospital until later. The patients were basically overrunning the place, so they were doing the best that they could with shock therapy to try to subdue them, and they would tie them up in straitjackets and leave them to themselves for days. And then when that wasn't working and they weren't able to control the patients with that, they developed this new technique. They heard about it from somewhere else, I guess, but they really pioneered it here at Danvers State, and that was known as the prefrontal lobotomy. So the lobotomy was really founded here and, like, perfected, quote unquote, because it's a horrible term to use, but that's the way they looked at it. They perfected the lobotomy here.
That's so sad and upsetting, especially as we talked about earlier today. Back in the early 1900s, you could end up in an insane asylum real quick and real easily. Yeah. It was not like today. You could be just overwhelmed one day. You just be having a bad day and someone doesn't want to deal with you and they'd
right. Especially lock you up. People who didn't have strong family foundations. You know, if someone's parents died when they were young and they were an orphan, if they acted out in any way, they were considered insane. Which, you know, if your parents die when you're young, you've been traumatized and you need therapy. You don't need to be locked away. So there were some patients like that. And there were some people who were violent and were sent up here for good reason, but there were also just a lot of people who were special needs and had cognitive or developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. They weren't insane. They were differently abled than we are.
Right. Yeah. And then to have to go through that and then to say the wrong thing to the wrong person and end up with a lobotomy, I mean, that's horrifying.
Yeah. And rumor has it that in addition to all of that, that there was a lot of abuse also. I mean, that to me is abusive enough on its own, but, you know, they were left to sit in their own feces and there are allegations of sexual abuse and obviously a lot of neglect, but conditions were pretty deplorable here from what I hear.
That's awful. It's interesting, not interesting, but yeah, interesting, but not in like a good way, in like a scary, yeah, terrible
it's
way.
Fascinating and horrifying.
Yes. When we went to, so Jamie took us down to the cemetery. Can you tell us a little about the cemetery that we saw?
So this is like the saddest part for me. The cemetery, as you walk down to it, it's, you know, on a path and you have to go through a cornfield and through some woods. It's not easily accessible. And unless you knew that it was there, you would have no idea that it was there. And when you get down into it, it's kind of this big open grassy field. And all along the edges, there are these stone pillars and each of the pillars has a number on it. And that's because that's how they were buried. When someone died here, they were buried under a marker with a number and not a name. Rumor has it that there are multiple bodies stacked in each grave. At some point in like the 2000s, a team of people went back and they tried their best to corroborate the names along with the numbers. So there is like a little memorial plaque there that has a lot of names on it. But as we were talking about before, you know, if there's 2,000 people here at any given time, the number, there's not even 2,000 names on the list. So there's way more bodies in
there. There's not even 500 names on the list.
Right.
I mean, it's insane. And we have some photos we'll put on the website, but there are markers all along the edges, but not in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost just seems like it was just a giant mass grave.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't even seem like individual graves stacked. It seems like a mass grave.
Like a potter's field, or whatever you'd call that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is awful and sad. And there is a heaviness around here for sure.
Yeah. So then, you know, they continued the lobotomies and they continued these horrible practices. And eventually the state finally caught up with how horrific this behavior was and they were shut down. This is insane to me because I'm in my 30s. They were shut down when I was in middle school. It's not like it was shut down a long time ago. I was in middle school. So it was 1992. From then on, even more spooky things seemed to happen. Like, this place became known as the haunt of the town. It was abandoned and it was left to deteriorate for many years. From what I hear, the police had instructions to just let it burn down if it ever caught fire. It was set to be turned into condos at one point, a lot sooner than it was, and a mysterious fire broke out in the middle of the night and burned at least one of the buildings down. Not the main facade, obviously, but one of the buildings. From what I hear, the security cameras stopped working right before the fire started.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So they weren't able to convert it to condos right then and there like they had hoped, because it needed to be fixed, you know, on some level so that they could.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm really excited that we're starting off our kind of ongoing series about the abandoned and haunted asylums in New England with Danvers State Hospital. Jamie, she did a really great job explaining very succinctly the history of it and kind of some of the highlights and lowlights, mainly lowlights, of what was going on there at the hospital.
Yeah, so I felt when we went down to the cemetery, there was a real heaviness about it. Where I was interviewing Jamie for this part, we were actually out of the cemetery. We were up on, what would you call it, Beth?
Like the little promenade where you could like overlook the highway?
Yes. So we were sitting up there. And even there, I felt like a kind of eerie, spooky feeling looking out over all the woods. We had the asylum behind us. Just the whole...
Well, the condos at least were behind us. Because there's no asylum there anymore.
Well, the former asylum is still there. It's been renovated, the inside of it.
Right, so it's literally just the front wall.
Correct. That's okay. What I'm saying.
All right.
Great. Glad we're on the same page now. So just the whole land, the whole area just has a feeling and a vibe to it. And yeah, it's spooky.
Amelia and I had opposite sort of reactions for when we walked into the cemetery. As we went into the cemetery, I felt fine. Like, and we were walking along, and I think at one point there was a shadow of my own phone that I was creating, and I actually shrieked and jumped. Yeah, there was something that I had done that scared me. So as we were coming out, though, it was a lot different because I hadn't felt any sort of real heaviness while I was in there. But as soon as we came out, and you have to come through almost like this little tunnel of trees to get out, and then you come out into like the open air next to that spooky cornfield that Amelia was talking about, I felt so much lighter when I came out that I didn't even notice how heavy it was inside the cemetery area itself.
Yeah, and I felt the exact opposite. I felt fine in the cemetery. It was spooky. It is spooky, and not spooky even just for ghosts, but spooky knowing what went on there and the history behind that is just so heavy in itself. It's awful. It's terrible. It's a terrible story. It's terrible that that happened. As we walked out, that's when I got this like insane heaviness. Like, I felt like I couldn't really breathe. Yeah, it was wild.
So Jamie had weighed in on this as well, and she had said that similarly, she felt very heavy in the cemetery, but then lighter once we came out onto the path. Jamie, over the course of we were with her a couple hours. Yeah. She shared a whole bunch of different stories, personal stories that she had from the cemetery area. And she also shared a lot of stories that she had heard secondhand from other people, third hand. And so luckily we were able to record a good number of those, and we'll share them with you as we kind of move through the podcast tonight. But as we were coming back up the path from the cemetery, Jamie shared this particular story with us.
So my theory is actually that the land has some pretty significant heavy energy to it.
Okay.
I don't even know. I can't even tell you like why I believe that. But like just driving down past the street, sometimes I've seen things, sometimes I've felt things. Like, I've seen a girl running out in front of my car several times. The same girl every time.
See, I think it's heavy now. I'm, like, heavy.
Yeah. Whew. So, I see this, when I drive down the road, I've seen it several times. This girl runs out, and she's in, like a hospital gown. Runs out in front of the road in front of me. And there are dogs chasing her. And I saw it so many times that one time I pulled my car over. He's like, okay, like, let's connect. Let's have this conversation. And she told me that she was a young girl who just wasn't listening to her parents and shipped her away because they were, you know, she was like a troublemaker. And she was horrifically abused, like detailed, like graphic sexual abuse to me. Said that it was by one nurse or whatever in particular. And she tried to escape, I guess, several times is the impression that I got off of it. Yeah. I got caught every time.
Oh, gosh. I wonder if they sent dogs after her.
I wonder if there's like a way to even look it up. I've kind of tried to like...
How'd you like that cereal chewing going on? No, just kidding. We were walking up the path and it was rocks, and it's a loud clip. But one of the things that I got thinking about as she was telling that story was the idea that was this girl being chased by dogs that they had set on her from the asylum? And just how horrible would that be, that not only are you treated so inhumanely as a person, but then they just set dogs after you to hunt you down when you try to get away because you're being abused.
Yeah, the things that went on at that place are so horrific. Honestly, I really believe the things that go on in a lot of those types of hospitals now are horrific, and it basically becomes a jail. But it's a jail for people who, no matter what they say, aren't ever taken seriously. And that in itself is very, very scary. But the things that went on there, and we've come so far in our society addressing mental health and helping people with mental health issues. I think we still have a very long way to go, but this wasn't that long ago.
No.
All this happened. This was not that long ago.
The hospital closed in 1992.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we were alive.
Right. That's 27 years ago.
Yeah.
Were you alive?
Unfortunately.
Oh. But not for long, right?
Not for long.
Not for long.
Okay. Okay.
I wasn't alive yet, you know, being only 25. So. Yeah. To get back to the ghost hunting portion of our podcast, how amazing is it that Jamie sees the same ghost time and time again, and she manages to think to herself, like, I just need to stop and have this conversation with her.
She's a pro.
Clearly.
Jamie's a pro.
Yeah. Good for you, Jamie.
Yeah. She knows what's up.
Mm-hmm.
She's helping out.
You know what we should have asked her?
What?
If she's seen that girl since they had that conversation, or did that girl just need to be able to tell someone her story? Jamie?
Jamie, send us a text.
Let us know. One of the other things that a lot of people don't know about Danvers is that Danvers actually used to be part of Salem. So nowadays, if you were to come and visit New England and you wanted to go to Salem, you would actually drive, ooh, how far is it? It's probably like 20 minutes out past Danvers. Yeah?
It's still pretty close.
But, I mean, it's going to take a while to get from where we were at Danvers all the way out to Salem Village.
Yes. From that part of Danvers to Salem Village.
Yes.
Yes.
So Danvers was, way back in the day, actually part of Salem, that they've split off into different towns since then. There's, like, the big park down in Salem Center, and then there's, like, the spooky no-traffic street. What's the name of that street?
That is part of Essex Street.
So Essex Street there, yeah. And where all the people hang out, and you can go get your fortune told, or, you know, like, stop into any of the different stores there. And that's usually what people think of when they think of Salem. They don't think of this big sprawling area that Salem used to be. And so I bring this up because the famous Rebecca Nurse from the Salem Witch Trials, her house was actually in what's now Danvers, over by the Danvers State Hospital, near medium Jamie Day's house. So Jamie did also tell us a little bit about her experience with the Rebecca Nurse house.
Well, Danvers used to be Salem Village, so, like, a lot of the witch trials stuff happened, yeah, actually here. Like, I can see Rebecca Nurse house from my house.
Cool. Really?
Yeah. They won't let me in to ghost hunt, I'm sure.
I grew up with the guy, the caretaker.
I mean, I've been there and done stuff, and I've picked up on stuff. Even actually before I was a medium, like, doing stuff there, before I knew I was a medium, I should say. My kids have even, like, seen stuff in the field at the Rebecca Nurse house.
Hmm.
Jamie's been in her community a long time.
Yes.
And she knows a lot of people and has obviously been a lot of places and done a lot of stuff in town. And as part of being somebody who's been around town forever, she obviously has all the stories. She did share with us a lot of different stories, and so we've kind of narrowed it down to a few really good ones that she shared with us. And so we have four of them here. The first one is about her in high school and her own experience in trying to get up into Danvers State Hospital.
So when I was in high school, this was kind of like the thing to do. It would get late at night and kids would come up and try and get inside. This was before it was condos. This was when it was the old abandoned hospital.
Yeah.
It was heavily monitored by police. I never made it inside personally. I was kind of chicken, not of the ghosts of the cops. So I never made it inside, but I have friends that did. And one of them tells a story about they had heard something, so, and they thought they saw, like, a flashlight, and so they thought it was a security guard or a police officer, so they were trying to, like, quietly make their way out, and they went back down a hallway they had just come. She tells better than I do, but they went back down a hallway that they had just come, and there was a suitcase in the middle of the hallway, like a 1950s old, that hadn't been there. She swears up and down it hadn't been there when they first walked up the hall.
That's spooky. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's wicked spooky.
Mm-hmm.
I stand by my statement. That is wicked spooky.
That is wicked spooky.
Wicked spooky.
Suddenly, a suitcase shows up in the middle of the hall.
Yeah.
And you know that the Danvers cops and the Mass State Police were not coming along putting a suitcase in the hall to trip kids.
Probably not.
I'm 100% sure of it. They were under orders to arrest anyone on site. like we talked about earlier when we were opening up, the idea that there are all of these condos all over where the hospital used to be. So the main building is still there, the facade of the administration building, but all of the outbuildings have been knocked down at this point. However, the people who have bought or rented the condos, the thousands and thousands of them that are everywhere, they also have a whole series of stories. And Jamie, being from town there, she has heard a lot of them. So she shared some of them with us here.
So the people that live in the condos now have lots of like experiences too. I actually, last week, someone messaged me, and I don't even know how she heard about me. I've never met her or anything like that. But she messaged me and was like, help, I just moved into the Bradley Apartments at Danvers State, and I keep seeing a woman in my bedroom at night. I've heard other stories. Like if you go on the Danvers Facebook page, mm-hmm. or, you know, like the town group, there are tons of stories. If you just search Danvers State, it's like everybody sharing their stories about stuff that they either saw when they snuck in as a kid, or now the people that live here. So the woman is a common one. People see her in their bedroom, standing at the foot of their bed, and walking down the street, like in this little area. People see her out walking around.
Was she like a patient or a nurse?
I think patient is like the overwhelming guess. But they said that they always describe her as wearing like a long flowy dress.
Is it older?
Is she a woman in white? I've heard it described as white by at least one person.
Potentially a woman in white hanging out at the old Danvers State Hospital.
Interesting.
Next week, I think we should play a drinking game with how many times we say interesting.
We say a lot.
We do say it a lot.
We talk about interesting stuff.
Well, we do. We should come up with new words, though.
Okay.
And dear listeners, as you heard, Danvers, Massachusetts has a Facebook page where everybody goes on and talks about their spooky sightings. So by all means, try to join the Danvers Facebook page and you can get some extra spooky stories. So next, we have yet another story that Jamie is sharing with us just from the general Danvers area about kind of the most common apparition that shows up there. So the one that people are most likely to see if they were to buy or rent a condo up there.
What a wild spot. Yeah. And I think it's funny that the old lady is like what people report seeing the most up here. I wonder if she was one of the caretakers. And now as I'm like trying to kind of feel into it, I even wonder if she was maybe like concerned, felt bad.
Well, because you said
realized it was crappy.
When you said you see her standing at the end of the bed.
Yeah.
So often we hear stories from people from places and those are nurse spirits.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Because nurses will come and stand at the end of beds.
And when...
like at that time period, especially.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. And I haven't experienced this woman myself.
Right.
When people tell me the stories, the way I even see it is like an older woman. And people have described her as like a long flowy dress. And I've heard her described as in white. But when I do my mediumship readings, people that are like flowy and white, those are good,
right,
happy spirits.
Yes.
Those are loving spirits. And so I wonder if she is more of a positive one. You know, maybe she feels obligated to still keep an eye on everyone here. That idea is even amazing to me that this place would, given all the tortured souls that are here, that like the primary spirit that is like haunting the residents would be a loving nurse.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad to think about if someone is stuck, but I think that makes sense.
Why do you think it makes so much sense?
That a nurse would be stuck there?
Yes.
Because you have all the doctors and people doing this kind of negative stuff. They have other focuses, right? And you have all these patients in a frame of mind, either going in with that frame or it becomes a certain way due to abuse or medication or whatever else. They're not totally hyper-focused on one thing. But you have the nurses who would then have all this energy that they're just pushing towards their patients in caring for people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had someone who really genuinely, with all their heart, with all their soul, really cared and put in that energy to their work, then I think it would make sense that they would be the one who would stay there.
Their energy got stuck there. Okay. That does make sense.
Yeah.
Thank you for elaborating. So this next clip isn't necessarily a ghost part of the clip. However, it was a story that Jamie told us that, quite frankly, I found really funny. So I decided to keep it in, and I thought it was good anyway. So this was kind of like a real life situation that would go on during the time that the hospital was up and running.
There was one story on the Facebook group about a guy who's now grown a doll, and he grew up in one of the homes nearby, like toward around the bottom. And he said his yard was kind of like a hill. And he said he looked out one time and could see a bunch of people running down the hill, and then could see a bunch of people chasing them.
Oh my goodness.
Coming right towards his house.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just like known back then that if you see that, you just lock the door and stay inside.
Yeah, for real. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's wild.
You didn't think that was a funny story?
Yeah, it's funny.
A sad story. I mean, it is. It's very sad that this was like a common occurrence and people would know, like, if the people start running across your yard, you know, like, don't freak out or anything. Just lock your door and continue about your business. Interrupt your family barbecue going on. Just shuffle everybody inside and wait until the escaped mental patients clear your yard.
Hmm.
Yeah. How many times do you think we've been asked about, has a ghost ever followed you home from an investigation?
We've been asked a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've asked that question of other people as well.
Do I think it's as often as you've asked other people? You always ask everyone that.
Well,
it's relevant. It totally is relevant.
And it scares the heck out of me. The idea of like, I'm going to get home and like something followed me. I don't want anything sticking to me.
Hmm.
It just needs to stay where it is. I will come and visit it if I need to. Fair enough?
Yeah.
So naturally, got to ask Jamie. Hey, Jamie, has anything ever followed you home from an investigation?
I did a project and some readings up here like a year ago and tried to kind of connect with them. And one of them kind of stuck to me and came home with me. And I came home and I took a shower and I could hear a man's voice in my living room. And my kids were out there like alone. I'm in the bathroom taking a shower and my kids are in the living room and I can hear a man's voice. And I'm like, I bust out of the shower, grab my towel, I run out, and I'm like, who's here? Who are you talking to? I'm freaking out. And they're not even in the playroom anymore, like the living room anymore. They're down in their bedroom. And they're like, what are you talking about? Nobody's here. Huh. I could hear it as clear as day.
Huh.
To me, I felt like there was something like, I felt like a pain like on one side of my face. I could feel like there was something like on one side of my face. And I posted about it on Instagram, and then a friend of mine who's a medium was like, oh my God, I see a man. Does he have, I didn't put that part on my Instagram. I just said, you know, oh my God, I just heard this man's voice. Listen to what just happened. And she said, I see, he's like half burned. And she, when she said it, she said the same side that I could feel like something wrong with his face. So
that's wild.
Yeah.
That's really the kind of thing that frightens me, that it's not only going to come home and follow me and terrorize me, but whatever it is might come home and wreak havoc for my family. So I find that whole idea terrifying. And Jamie, I should have followed up my question with you and asked if you ever heard him again, or if he's still there, or if you somehow had to do some sort of cleansing in order to get rid of him, or kind of what the follow-up on that was. So two follow-up questions now, Jamie. You'll have to get back to us on those. One of the things that we weren't able to get a recording of because we were up on the hill and there was just too much wind, we were all talking as we were up there doing the investigation about why there isn't any sort of like proof from inside the old hospital of hauntings in there. Jamie talked for a while about different ghost hunting teams that have been in there. There was only one team that supposedly got inside and got proof during a nighttime ghost hunt. The thing is, like, if you're a ghost hunting group and you actually got proof that there were ghosts inside of abandoned hospital, wouldn't you be tripping over yourself in order to actually get that proof out to the public?
Yes.
So what do you think their holdup is?
I have no idea.
Can you take any guesses?
No. I think that's ridiculous.
Some of the ideas that we kicked around while we were actually there with the idea of, you know, well, maybe they're afraid of getting fined or they're afraid of some sort of like trespassing charge. But the thing is, you know, 2006 was more than 7 years ago, which would be the statute of limitations on that. If you had proof, you think that it would be fine. Like, you could certainly release at this point that you had been inside the old state hospital and that you had proof that there were ghostly happenings in there. Also, even if they were going to hit you with a fine or a trespassing, like, you're a ghost hunter. Like, you would think that you would want to put it out there. Here is proof, definitely. And I think that by saying, like, we have proof, but we're not going to release it is nonsense.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So Danders State Hospital was there from the 1880s until they closed it down in 1992. And then the land was sold to a developer in 2006. So for that 14 years or so there, it was just all sorts of a hot mess. But it was very heavily guarded by both the Mass State Police and the Danvers local town police. My understanding is that it was really difficult for anybody to be getting in there. When they closed down the hospital back in 1992, Amelia and Jamie had gone back to the buggy location. And because I'm a big baby, I don't like bugs. So I didn't find out about this part of the conversation until I was doing some pre-production editing to get these clips ready. But they talked a lot about when they closed the asylum. So here's Amelia and Jamie talking through what went into the planning of closing down the state hospital.
Okay, so you've lived in Danvers your whole life?
Yeah, I mean, I lived away for a little while, but grew up here, yes.
So were you around here when it was still the hospital then?
Yes.
Yeah.
So when they shut it down, where did everyone go?
Different parts, different institutions in the state. And they were also trying to kind of get away from institutions at the time. So yeah, they built a lot of smaller group homes.
Oh, okay.
And at that point, the state shut them down because they were mistreating their patients.
Right.
You know, the state had really kind of caught on to the regulations quite a bit more by then. And that's when they really started pushing the group homes as opposed to the institutions. But still, if you go down the hill,
mm-hmm,
when you get to the bottom of the hill, if you take a left as opposed to a right, which the right brings you back like towards the highway, if you take a left, they still have all, like, that's Hogan Regional, like where they do all kinds of special ed, special needs work.
Okay.
So this is still kind of the basis of the property.
Because one thing I always think about when they get rid of these places and shut them down, so my dad, he grew up in Foxborough. So in the 60s, 70s, sometime around there, there was an institution in his town. And he said they closed it and they didn't do anything with the people. So he said there were just all these people walking around.
I mean, I think for some people that probably is what happened. But the people, you know, I think there were probably some people that they released and realized could maybe take care of themselves,
yeah,
better than they thought. And I think that there were a lot of people that were put in group homes. The people that were wards of the state still,
yeah,
couldn't take care of themselves. But the people that live in town will tell you, especially those who lived like around the bottom of this hill, mm-hmm, that patients would escape all the time and they would get knocks on their door, like from the police. Stay in your houses, lock the doors. We have escaped patients. And some of
that's
them were
scary.
Violent. Some of,
yeah,
them were violent.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you had 2,000 people. I mean, you had 2,000 general public. I mean, you're going to get,
right,
some violent people in there.
Yes. And some of them were violent before they came here. And some of them were probably violent as a result of what they,
yeah,
went through here.
For sure.
So there's a big part of me that wonders how much of the negative energy that's still there on the property is based on not only the mistreatment of the people while they were there in the state hospital, but then the complete lack of planning for what was going to happen with these people when they closed it. I mean, you can't just come in and close down a hospital with 2,000 patients and have no sort of transition plan. Group homes are only going to have 10 or 12 people each. Did they have 200 group,
right,
homes all set up for these people? And when they were being placed in the group homes, were they appropriately grouped?
Right.
Right. And I certainly don't know if any of the spirits that are still there on the property now are people who left and then maybe were forgotten about, or they fell through the cracks in the system. Maybe they ended up going back up to the property because it was the only place that they knew, and maybe living in the tunnels. Did we talk about the tunnels at all?
No.
Danvers State Hospital was serviced by a huge network underground of all sorts of tunneling. The tunnels are supposedly just horrific even to this day to go in, and they just have this terrible, terrible energy. Jamie talked earlier about people being, you know, like locked up and, you know, put in a straitjacket and left alone for days. They would just put them in the tunnels because they were too loud. You know, people yelling and sort of like, we don't want to listen to you. So they would leave people in the tunnels. But they were a good way to be able to move from one area of the hospital campus to another one, building to building, mm-hmm, without having to go out into the elements, you know, and to really kind of keep off the radar. The tunnels are another place where a lot of horrific things happen to people. So there's a possibility that people who fell through the cracks may have come back and, you know, set up shop in the tunnels underneath. They were living, that just camping there on the land. You never know. And then possibly died there on the, and are still haunting the land.
I don't know if there's any evidence of that, but yeah, it's possible. It's possible, yeah.
We're on a ghost hunting podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we don't necessarily traffic in like hard concrete evidence. It's a lot of theory. It's a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
So now the part you guys have all been waiting for, to find out a little bit about the fabulous and wonderful medium Jamie Day.
Woohoo!
One of the things that is always a point of interest is, at least to me, not being somebody who's necessarily on point psychic. I can only call it up occasionally and without ever trying. Do you have one of those things that sometimes it just comes through and other times, like, I can't do it on command?
Yeah, no. I mean, back when I was doing readings professionally and semi-professionally, I mean, if there's someone standing across me, then I can kind of call it up. I wouldn't say throughout my day, I'm like, ooh, I need to be psychic now. I'd say it just pops up when it does and does when it doesn't. You know my big psychic thing, Beth? I've told you about this.
I bet you're going to tell me again right now.
I absolutely am. And it's such a stupid thing. And I've talked to other people and they say they have the same, like, not necessarily the exact same. Some of them do. But a lot of people have like these similar things where it's just like a dumb psychic thing to have.
Yep.
So I always know when people are reading my text messages.
That's called a read receipt?
No. It happens with you a lot too. So what will happen is I'll send someone a text message or something. I'll be going about my day and all of a sudden I hear myself reading the text message in my head. And when I finish, like a beat goes by and I get a response.
If it's from me, it's probably snarky.
Usually, yes.
Yes. Okay. I'm much nicer on the podcast than I am in real life.
I'm just really good at editing.
So, sorry, back to Jamie. We always like to know how our guests and our interviewees kind of came upon their various gifts, their psychicness, their medium gifts. And so Jamie, you talked a little bit about that right here.
Do you want to tell our listeners a little about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So my name's Jamie. I'm from Danvers. I was mostly born and raised here. I did live in Salem for a long time. So I always like to joke that, you know, I've seen spirits and ghosts and had ghostly experiences since I was a little girl. And I didn't even really realize that I was a medium until I was in my 30s. So for me, it was like I just thought everywhere that I lived was haunted. I live in a town that was known for it. And then I moved to another town that was known for it. So I just thought I happened to keep getting the haunted houses. But now, you know, in my 30s, I was able to put two and two together. And I have been doing this work professionally now for about 2 years and for a while before that, before I kind of came out of the medium closet. So I give mediumship readings to people to help them connect with their past loved ones, to sort of offer a sense of validation and love and let them know that they're still with you. I also do spiritual development teachings. So I teach mediumship to people. I teach, you know, various other spiritual development, how to connect to your spirit guides, your intuition. We do, you know, yoga and meditation workshops. Mm-hmm. So I do all that kinds of stuff, but I'm also a huge horror movie buff. I've always loved ghost stories. When I was a kid, I used to read like spooky stories or, you know, scary stories to tell in the dark.
Like that was like my favorite
book. Yeah, me too. And I still have the book and my kids still read it. And it's like dog-eared, like the pages are all falling out. Mm-hmm. And I still read it to my kids. My 5-year-old son wants me to read it to him before bed. So I have a feeling he's going to take after his mom.
Like, he's going to be spooky.
Into the ghost. Yes. Yeah. So I've always been into that. Like I would have the book like hidden in the hymnal at church when I was a kid. And my friends would be watching like Full House and I would be watching Unsolved Mysteries.
There you go.
I was like obsessed with James Van Praagh when I was like 7. He's a huge medium. How I even knew who he was, I don't know. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So you said you realized you were a medium. How did that happen? Like in your 30s?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it was necessarily any like one particular incident. I've always, like I said, I've always kind of seen ghosts and felt drawn to like spirits and spirituality and all that kind of stuff. But, I would say probably the biggest factor that helped pull it out in me was the sudden and unexpected passing of my mother-in-law. She died of a very sudden heart attack, and it was really kind of traumatic for all of us. We had just lost my father-in-law a year prior to that, and my mother-in-law was very into mediums. And when she died, you know, I remember crying, and I was taking care of everybody else. I got a whole mess of kids and my husband to take care of. And so I would like be crying to myself and trying to talk to her on the way into work. And I would just beg her, like, send me signs. I know that you were into this, and I know that you would be lobbing them at me. So just let me see them. And it was like floodgates kind of opened. I just was getting so many signs. And I would text my sister-in-law and be like, okay, I know this is going to sound really weird, but like, I swear your mother-in-law is, I swear your mom is standing behind me right now. Like, I can feel her.
Yeah, wow.
There was even one incident where my husband was cracking some kind of sarcastic joke. He wasn't even really talking about his parents, but he was just teasing me, and he said something like, oh yeah, well, I'm an orphan, and we have this cabinet in our living room that has my mother-in-law, my father-in-law's ashes are mixed together because they were together from the time they were 14.
Oh, God bless
them. I know. So they're, she literally died of a broken heart after he died. So we have their ashes mixed together, and they're in this cabinet, and the cabinet is like 200 years old, a super old antique. And so we had cardboard wedged into the door to make sure it stays shut. I don't want my kids messing with the ashes, right? Mm-hmm. So we have cardboard like wedged in there to make sure it stays shut. And my husband's like, yeah, well, I'm an orphan. And the door went pop and flew open. The cardboard went and popped out. And I was like, ooh, your mom did not like that.
Oh gosh.
So, she has made her presence known. Wow. And I still, you know, I still feel her very strongly with me. And like, before I do readings, sometimes I call on her, or I call on my grandmother who has since passed too. And I just feel they were into it, and they supported me. And I feel like they're on the other side supporting me now. They're like my partners in work.
See, that's a really good mother-in-law story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That's awesome.
Well, I wasn't raised by my mom. And I will never forget that one of the first things that she, you know, like once we really got into a relationship and I was starting to kind of be more a part of the family, she said to me, you can call me mom if you want to. And I'll I loved her and I miss her.
Aww, sorry. Yeah.
No, that's
but
okay.
Glad that she's there. Like yeah. She's still there. Yeah.
Yeah, she is.
Helping you out still.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Oh, that's a nice story.
Yeah.
I like that story. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So that's how Jamie found out she was a medium.
Yeah, that's great. Good story.
With the amount of negative mother-in-law stories that are out there, it's just so refreshing to hear like a positive, my mother-in-law did this for me, and you know, it shows a really good connection. And I think it really reflects well on Jamie that she was able to forge that relationship, that those are typically pretty fraught with tension.
Yeah, I watch a lot of Dr. Phil. They're always talking about monster-in-laws.
Yeah. Dr. Phil, really?
I love Dr. Phil.
Oh, sorry. I like Mari.
Okay.
Dr. Phil's a little too woo-woo.
You think Dr. Phil is woo-woo and Mari isn't?
Mari is all sorts of drama, and you are the father, and the lie detector test shows that was not the truth.
I've been to an episode of Mari.
I know. I'm pretty jealous. The last clip that we have from Jamie for tonight is about what she does when she does a mediumship reading. We've had a number of different mediums and psychics on here. They each have their own sort of style that they go through and how they connect with different things. I think that it is really helpful, like if you wanted to go to Abigail Dalton, or if you wanted to go see Tim Regan, or if you wanted to get in touch with medium Jamie Day, they're all going to have a different style. Knowing your medium style before you go in there is definitely helpful to make sure that you're getting the best results for, quite frankly, your money. Here goes Jamie.
People sit with you for mediumship readings. Is it like a half hour and you just get what kind of comes in? Do people get to ask about certain other people?
Yeah, so I do in my private readings. Those are currently around 45 minutes. I've changed the times up and down a little, and I feel like that's what works the best, especially because I often tend to go over a little bit. So those are about, they're supposed to be 45 minutes. And I usually start with whatever is coming through for you. And then I try and save time for if you have any specific questions. And you don't have to just ask mediumship questions. You can ask, you know, if you want to connect with your spirit guides, find out who your spirit guides are. A lot of the times the spirit guide stuff will bring up past life stuff, mm-hmm. because that's how they know you. That's how they're connected to you. And it relates to your present life. I also don't mind if someone says to me like, oh, you know, I really wanted to talk to my grandma and she didn't come through. Can you feel her around? Now, I can't control it. She may not come through, but I'm always willing to try. Mm-hmm. And I very rarely have an issue with it. Usually if you want to hear from them, they want to support you in that.
One thing people kind of always ask about on the show. So you define yourself as a medium. Mm-hmm. Would you also say you're a psychic?
So that's tricky. So, right. I mean, technically, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
But I'm like, I've always been kind of resistant to the term and I don't know why. I can't really put my finger on why. That's like hard for me to say. But yeah, I feel like I'm a psychic medium. Now, mostly what I feel like I get is info from spirits that are around you, but mm-hmm. they share information with me that's going to help you. And sometimes it'll be future predictions, which are often right. And I hear from people later, oh my God, he did get that job, you know.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so thanks so much, psychic medium Jamie Day. That was awesome. Please, please, please go check out Jamie. Her Instagram and Facebook is at Medium Jamie Day. That's Medium JAMIEDAY. You can book a reading directly on her website at www.mediumjamieday.com. They can reach her through email, mediumjamieday@gmail.com, or by cell phone, 968-857-6468. If you're dialing outside of the United States, please be sure to use +1. And of course, all that information is going to be on our website, www.ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. We'll have that. We'll have some photos we took while we were there, all of Jamie's contact information.
Maybe we'll even get a nice picture of Jamie to put up there.
Maybe we will. She has tons of nice pictures of herself.
I know. She's gorgeous.
She's gorgeous, and she's very active online.
Mm-hmm. I saw a picture of her earlier today eating a donut.
I know.
Oh, my
so
God.
Jealous.
She looked amazing.
I know. And I wanted that donut. Okay. So, yeah. Thanks, Jamie. That was awesome. I hope we all learned a whole bunch about Danvers Insane Asylum.
Danvers State Hospital.
Yeah.
The city of Danvers.
Yeah.
Finding a medium in Danvers.
Yeah.
Walking down a crunchy path to a cemetery in Danvers.
Yeah.
And that Amelia is afraid of cornfields.
Yeah, we learned a lot tonight.
All right. As usual, we have some reviews. Do we get any mail this week?
I don't think we got any mail. Do we get any mail? Oh, we got some mail, but it's relevant to next week's episode.
Okay.
So we will go over that next week. We have one review this week. One review that left us a comment, I should say. And that review is from Scarlett O'Plaza. That name sounds familiar. Title, so interesting. New to this podcast and I'm really impressed. Amelia and Beth are having so much fun, and I'm totally having fun with them. The physicist was really important. More Brits, please. Party face emoji. Well, thank you so much, Scarlett. That was a really nice review to get. We really appreciate it. And wouldn't you know it, we have something coming up with someone from England on our show coming up. So there you go.
We have another English person coming?
Sort of.
Okay.
We'll find out next week. Ba-da-da!
I don't know what that was all about.
Have a look at this.
And we all are very familiar with what that sound clip means. Here is our Daniel Australian story from the week, mate.
At a nearby location, about 500
stop,
meters.
Stop.
That's pretty good though, wasn't it?
That was pretty good.
Think I could do the whole thing?
Please don't.
At a nearby location, about 500 meters away, a close friend and I occasionally would faintly hear the sounds of sheep, dogs, and a man on horseback whistling and calling out to his dogs. Then one time, on a clear sunny day, we saw a flock of sheep being herded by a man on horseback and his two dogs. This would be okay if it wasn't for the fact that all of them were going through solid trees, at least the smaller trees. I estimate many of the smaller trees were around 50 years old, so assume that the ghosts were from around that time. Apparently a fire went through the area around 50 years earlier, and although I didn't find any stories about a man and his flock perishing, their panicking, fleeing of the flames and smoke must have left an impression on the land.
Nice story, Daniel. I like that one a lot. That was short and sweet.
It was a very short and sweet story, and it's very pastoral.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, a nice outdoorsy sort of. We're not calling them time loops anymore. What are we calling them?
Stone tape.
Stone tape theory.
Yeah, that's great.
We're going to have to find out now what time loops actually are.
I know what they are. They are related to time travel.
What?
Yeah. That's all right.
Never mind. Stone tape theory it is.
We got to call the aquarium or something, dude.
And there goes our brand new clip for the week. And as we now know, that clip is for Mike from Arizona, formerly from Massachusetts. If you don't know what that clip is from, because some people were a little confused by it.
That was me. I actually thought it was from Good Will Hunting. It is not.
You can Google Boston man reacts to finding a huge fish. Just Google Jay finds a baby whale.
Jay
finds a baby whale, and it will come up and it will make your day if you haven't seen it yet. But it is so viral from a few years ago. So
it's like the most Boston thing ever. And when she started showing it to me so that I could remember what it was, and we would play it here, except I make Amelia not do the cursing. Chrissy, with your 9-year-old daughter, don't play the YouTube clip in front of her.
Yeah, if you have kids, don't show them this clip. NSFW. It's an NSFW clip. Not safe for work.
But really, really funny.
Oh my God, so good.
And the Boston in it is just brutal.
Yeah, and since Mike said he was missing Boston or missing New England and that there was no water where he was, we thought it was just the right one to throw in there. Here we go. Here's Mike's story.
Around 1996 to 1998, my friend and I took a couple of trips down to Dudleytown in Connecticut. It's an abandoned town in the northwest corner of the state, kind of near Tolland. It's managed by the ominously named Dark Entries Forest Association. Maybe they're just Bauhaus fans. I don't know. A brief recap of the legend is that the town was cursed. Homes and farms would mysteriously burn, crops would fail. Eventually it dwindled to one stubborn farmer and his poor family. They were attacked and harassed at night until the wife took the kids and left. The farmer stayed to finish the season. And one night, he stumbled into the next town, bedraggled and rambling about cloven-hooved beasts chasing him in the night. So, of course, we made a day trip out of it. First trip in 1996. My friend Brendan, myself, and a girl I had just met went down. We thoroughly psyched ourselves out and didn't get very far into the woods. We got to this one bend in the trail that went down a hill and all stopped. After a few minutes of us just standing there quiet, I asked, "Am I the only one that gets the feeling not to go down that trail?" I wasn't, and we left. 2 summers later, Brendan, myself, and my girlfriend Erin went down. Erin had the bright idea to bring offerings.
Hold on. Yeah, I have a question. Mike, yo, can you let us know if Erin is the girl you just met previously? Like, is it a girl I just met went down? And now he's talking about Erin. So is this like a continuation?
Myself and my girlfriend, Erin.
Before that, Beth.
So that was 2 years before.
Yes.
I'm going to assume they're different people.
Erin
had the bright idea to bring offerings. We picked up some strawberries to leave along the path and had a very positive experience. We all felt welcomed. I brought a Polaroid and got some excellent ghost blob photos. 2 photos actually triangulate a ghost in the same spot over a cellar hole. I took 2 photos of the cellar hole, one the length of the house, the other at a perpendicular angle of where the front of the house would have been. We had agreed not to look at any of the photos until after we left. That was a good call. We would have psyched ourselves right out of there. The end.
Great story. I like that one.
I like all of our drive-by ghosting stories.
Yeah, they're all great. So thanks, guys. That was awesome. And if you want to send us a drive-by ghosting, please feel free to do so by emailing us ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com, or you can just go right onto our website, www.ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. We have a contact form right on there. You can send it to us discreetly or slip into our DMs. We're on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter.
And mainly, keep in mind, record yourself telling your ghost story. And
yeah, which is a lot of fun. People will hear you in Sweden. We have a lot of Swedish listeners.
And someone in Poland.
Yeah. Yeah. So on Facebook and Instagram, we're Ghost Hunting in New England. On Twitter, we're Ghost Hunting NE. Please find us there. And as always, tip your waitress.
Make sure you give us a 5-star review.
Yeah. Give us a 5-star review.
What is it? Like, subscribe, and
review.
And review our podcast.
5 stars.
5 stars.
5 stars.
And write a fun review so that we can talk about it and name you and give you a serious shout out.
Yeah. And feel really good about ourselves in our hearts.
Don't give us a 1-star review because that just makes you a
punk.
Punk. There we go. Punk.
Yeah. If you don't think we deserve 5 stars, please send us a direct message and let us know what we can do to make the show a little bit better for you. And remember, if you're going to a casual restaurant,
If you order your food to go, take it to go. If you plan on eating there, have it for there. You don't need to eat to-go stuff while you're sitting down. The rainforest is burning, and please help save it.
Anything else?
Nope.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Happy hunting. I just noticed that Amelia's microphone is backwards in the holder, which might explain why she's a little bit softer than I am. I am now rearranging Amelia's microphone. It's rearranged. I wonder if she'll notice when she comes back. I doubt she'll notice how the microphone looks, but I wonder if she'll notice the difference in the sound quality when she's doing the editing. She stopped and got pizza on the way here because she was hungry. I haven't eaten anything. She's grumpy. I'm also grumpy. We have different reasons for our grumpiness.